Chapter 1. Glorious news! Naps landed again in France! Hurrah! My island is none too big, Napoleon declared when he found himself ruler of Elba, the tiny island that lies between Corsica and Italy. He had been emperor of France and ruler of 44 million people, yet now in 1814 he governed just 86 square miles and 11,000 subjects. Yet he was determined to be a good ruler. And no sooner had he arrived than he began issuing a string of decrees that would reform the island's mining industry and its agriculture. Little escaped his attention. Inform the intendant, he wrote, of my dissatisfaction at the dirty state of the streets. His plans extended far beyond street cleaning. He wanted to build a new hospital, new schools and new roads, but there was never enough money. The restored monarchy in France had agreed to pay Napoleon a subsidy of 2 million francs a year, but it soon became apparent that the money would never be paid, and without money, there could be no new hospitals, schools or roads. Frustrated by this failure, the emperor retired into a sulk, passing the days by playing cards with his attendants, and all the while aware of the British and French warships that guarded Elba's coast to make certain he did not leave his Lilliputian kingdom. The emperor was bored. He missed his wife and son. He missed Josephine too, and he was inconsolable when the news of her death reached Elba. Poor Josephine, with her black teeth, languid manner and lissom body. A woman who was adored by every man who met her, who was unfaithful to Napoleon yet was always forgiven. He loved her, even though for dynastic reasons he had divorced her. "I have not passed a day without loving you," he wrote to her after her death, as though she still lived. "I have not spent a night without clasping you in my arms. No woman was ever loved with such devotion." He was bored and he was angry. He was angry at Louis XVIII, who was not paying the agreed subsidy, and furious at Talleyrand, once his own foreign minister, who now negotiated for the French monarchy at the Congress of Vienna. Talleyrand, sly, clever and duplicitous, was warning the other European envoys that Napoleon could never be kept safe on a small Mediterranean island so close to France. He wanted the emperor sent far away to some remote place like the Azores, or better still, to a West Indian island where the yellow fever raged, or perhaps to some speck in a distant ocean like St. Helena. Talleyrand was right, while the British commissioner, sent to Elba to keep a watchful eye on the emperor, was wrong. Sir Neil Campbell believed that Napoleon had accepted his fate and wrote as much to Lord Castlereagh, Britain's foreign minister. "I begin to think," he reported, "that he is quite resigned to his retreat." The emperor was anything but resigned. He followed the news from France and noted the dissatisfaction with the restored monarchy. There was widespread unemployment, the price of bread was high, and people who had greeted the emperor's abdication with relief now looked back on his regime with regret. And so he began to make plans. He'd been allowed a puny navy, nothing large enough to threaten the French and British ships that guarded him, and in mid-February 1815 he ordered the Inconstant, the largest of his brigs, brought into port. "Have its copper bottom overhauled," he commanded, "its leaks stopped, and have it painted like the English brigs. I want it in the bay and ready by the 24th or 25th of this month." He ordered two other large ships to be chartered. He'd been allowed to take 1,000 soldiers to Elba, including 400 veterans of his old Imperial Guard and a battalion of Polish lancers, and with those troops he would attempt to invade France. And Sir Neil Campbell suspected nothing. Sir Neil was a decent man, 39 years old in 1815, with a successful military career which almost ended in 1814 when he was appointed military attaché to the Russian army invading France. He had survived battles in Spain, but at Fere Champenoise he was mistaken by an overenthusiastic Cossack for a French officer and savagely wounded. He survived his wounds and was appointed British commissioner to His Highness the Emperor Napoleon, ruler of Elba. Lord Castlereagh stressed that Sir Neil was not the emperor's jailer, but of course part of his job was to keep a close eye on Napoleon. Yet Sir Neil had been lulled, and in February 1815, while the Inconstant was being disguised as a British ship, he told the emperor that he needed to sail to Italy to consult with his doctor. This may well have been true, but it is also true that Signora Bartoli, Sir Neil's mistress, lived in Leghorn, and that is where he sailed. The emperor wished Sir Neil well, and hoped he would return by the end of the month, because the Princess Borghese was giving a ball, and Sir Neil promised he would do his best to attend. The Princess Borghese was Napoleon's beguiling sister, the lovely Pauline, who had joined her brother in exile. Penury had forced the sale of her lavish house in Paris, which had been purchased by the British government for use as their embassy. That meant that for 5 months it had been home to the Duke of Wellington, who had been appointed Britain's ambassador to the court of Louis XVIII. The house, on the Rue du Faubourg Saint-Honoré, is a jewel, and it is still Britain's embassy.